So, Philip, if you were going to start up a duo, who would you start up a duo with?
See, that's a hard question. You really have to think about it. I'm not married to anyone, so I can't just ask them like some lazy group.
Right.
But I would have to pick somebody who's like complements my style, like, mm-hmm. you know, so we can yin yang it. So
right.
So that we're not just doing the same thing over and over. Yeah. You'd have to be somebody that I really respect.
Uh-huh.
You know, probably have like a really great beard.
Uh-huh.
Especially a red one. That would be great for an improv duo.
Yeah. Well, red beards are probably the best.
Yeah. And want somebody with like a great deep baritone speaking voice. And
those are hard to come by these days.
Right. Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's hard criteria.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have to have glasses and be married, live in St. Paul,
mm-hmm.
because I don't want them to be too close to me, but not too far.
Mm-hmm. That's a tall order.
I don't know. There's probably nobody like that in the Twin Cities.
I'm trying to think.
Well, that's why I don't have a duo.
Well, what about Cliff from the away team? I guess I don't know if he's married, but I think he is.
It all comes down to that one point.
Huh.
I think maybe every other criteria he might fit.
Yeah. Beard's more brown than red.
Close. Oh, I'm out. Fuck it.
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hi, I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our improvers.
Now it's time for Next at Bat.
And we're here today with We Know Each Other. Hi, We Know Each Other.
Hi.
And this is the first time that we've had a wife team.
Oh.
OMG.
We're groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking.
Because Matt and I don't count.
Yeah.
That's true. So can you guys introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's Dan.
My name's Ellen.
And your last name is?
Jaquette.
Oh, boy.
You're the same one.
I wanted you to say it because, honestly, a lot of people mispronounce your last
true.
Names.
That's actually, most people
here do. Here are the ways it's not pronounced. Jaquette. Jacket. Jerquette.
Jerquette, has someone actually said that?
Yeah, they knew they were doing it wrong.
Isn't the correct pronunciation actually Jacquet or well, something super French?
Oh man, if you want to go into it. So Jean-Paul Jacquet was the first Jacquet to come over from, he worked for the Dutch East Indies Company.
Really?
He came to America,
I was
yeah.
just reading about that the other
Yeah,
day.
He came to America in the 1600s after losing, I want to say, South Africa to the Dutch. He was an Englishman.
Is this related to the pronunciation of the name?
No, not at all.
Okay, can we just...
He was the Jacquet, and then they proceeded, which is a Swiss name originally, but then they proceeded to, the Swiss proceeded to marry a bunch of English women and men, and the name got diluted, and eventually they settled on Jacquet, but then added another T and an E to the end. So that people would pronounce it more like they thought it was pronounced.
Hmm.
Good story, Dan.
Thanks. My dad's really into genealogy.
But now you know.
Yeah,
now
story.
We know. Well, if someone ever pronounces it Jacquet, then technically they're not mispronounced.
Sure. Well, that was back when it only had one T at the end.
Oh,
and no
so
extra
now they
e.
would be.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Well, if they were like a Highlander that knew me from 200 years ago.
Which they knew doesn't you? Exist.
You're
that person doesn't exist.
So if somebody pronounced it Jacquette, would that be correct?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Because that's what I thought it was originally.
No, but that's
probably
closer
actually pretty
than most
original.
People.
I don't feel like anyone's mispronounced it that way.
Yeah.
We joked about, because my maiden name is also a weird name that no one can say right. We joked about combining them for a while.
Yeah.
So my maiden name's Quali, and we were like, we'll just call ourselves Jaquali.
Yeah.
It'd be cool. I feel like it sounds more similar to that.
Yeah.
How you're saying it.
But we didn't do that.
But we didn't. Lazy.
That's pretty awesome. And as always, I'm joined today with...
Philip Simondet. If you want to say it the French way, but we say it Philip Simondet.
That's true, but Siri pronounces it Simondet.
Oh, well,
oh, really?
Yeah.
We have to defer to Siri because she's the future.
So from now on, you are Philip Simondet.
Yeah, great. Robots are always right. So.
And our host this evening is...
Matt McLeod. Thank you.
Wait, is that just how you say that?
Yeah, Siri gets it right.
Ooh,
boy. Ugh. Stupid.
Yeah. It's because Siri's... I don't know.
Scottish.
Scotch-Irish.
Scotch-Irish.
Yeah. Probably. She probably is.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, Siri. Come on, that kind of name.
Obviously.
That sounds pretty Scotch-Irish.
So, you guys formed We Know Each Other pretty recently, yes?
Yeah.
I mean, under this moniker?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, or even any moniker. We hadn't. Okay. We don't have any previous duos.
Yeah, we never
together.
Performed together. It was this fall, right? Past
sure.
Late fall when we decided to try something.
Okay.
To
do yeah. What again. Prompted you to do that as a duo?
We had been thinking about it
and thinking, nope.
Yeah.
For quite a while.
But yeah, but somewhat the idea came from moving here because we both moved here recently. I mean, we moved here together. And didn't
did you guys
know anybody.
Know that?
Yes.
Did you know feel we moved like here we together? Talk about that way too much.
Boy. No, we came from Philadelphia.
Ugh.
Yeah. But then not knowing anybody, I was like, oh, how are we going to do improv? Oh, well, I already know you. Hey, how about we do improv together?
That really was it. It was like the lazy person's response when really we should have been going out and meeting people. Maybe. But it was also like, you know, you and I had joked about doing it for a few years now. And I think you were too, but I was really hesitant to do it. I thought it'd be like a little too precious or something to have a married couple doing improv together. I don't know.
Yeah.
For us anyway.
Yeah. I think we felt similar to that. It was like, oh, it'd be good to do, but it's going to be like, oh, we get it. They're married. Look at that. Another married scene.
Ooh, they're so married. But then it's like, you know, it's interesting because once we moved and we got to see improv in another city, which is awesome,
mm-hmm.
We get to talk about, oh, you know, it's different, or they do this or do that. And it started to really solidify that we felt the same about what we wanted to do and what we wanted to get better at. And so I think that's why we really decided to start performing together, was because we were on the same page with a lot of things that we wanted to try and move forward with. Right.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, I think it got kicked up a gear when, there was a duo workshop that mm-hmm. happened, and we're like, oh, hey, we had like practiced once or twice at home, which they weren't great practices.
No, they were really bad.
Because it's like you're doing it in your living room and the cat walks by and now the cat's in the scene.
Our cat was in every scene.
Or needs some attention, so the scene stops, and it's like, oh, or you get tired, and I don't know. Something about being at a different place is way more motivating than practicing at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, so this duo workshop got announced. We're like, hey, let's do it. And then...
Was that the one with John Haynes and Adam
yeah.
Felix?
Yeah, correct.
It was good. And I think it was nice to have sort of a different place to try out being a duo, which was really the whole point of it, and to get some feedback on, you know, what we want to do and move forward with. So yeah. That really helped us, I think, kind of take the next step and decide to do stuff.
Yeah, to take it maybe a little more seriously and be yeah. like, okay, let's practice somewhere else and think more critically about what we want to do.
Yeah.
Cool. What sort of stuff did you decide to work on? Like, what did you decide to push yourself with?
Well, it's kind of funny, because I was really into like patient work and patient scenes for mm-hmm. a while, and I knew Dan would be a good person to work with on that, because he's not going to edit me unless you really, really are feeling it. We'll let each other go, and I think the trust is there where we can explore a lot of things that maybe don't happen in larger groups, not for any bad reasons, but when you have more people playing, I think, you know.
Yeah. And so it ends
there's a lot more feet that want to move.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Which is good and brings a whole different yeah. energy. Mm-hmm. But with the duo, we thought that would be a good place to explore it. And I think we just wanted to work on, I don't know, I wanted to get goofier, and you're goofy.
Yeah, and I think we kind of wanted it to be pretty stripped down. Like, we don't have much of a form. We met yeah. with Jill Bernard once, right?
I don't know. Sure, yeah.
I think just once. Or before we were talking to her about it, and then she had us fill out her solo improv form, mm-hmm. even though we were two people, and then she got back to us eventually. It was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do for you guys. And so we met with her once, and she really just gave us an edit, and that's pretty much it. So we have a specific edit that we use, and then other than that, it's pretty open. But I think we end up doing a lot more slower scenes than we would do in other groups. Like, we had a set last Friday, and there were definitely multiple moments where we were just sort of staring at each other, and not in like a awkward what do we say next, but just like enjoying that long pause for because mm-hmm. it's funny, but also to see what can come out of waiting that much.
Mm-hmm. I like doing that. I yeah. like just sort of waiting and seeing what yeah, you get out
absolutely.
Of someone.
Yeah.
And that's harder with, yeah, it's nice with another person, you know.
Yeah.
Won't just.
Yeah. So part of it, part of doing that is beneficial from the duo. That sentence was constructed poorly. But being a duo,
that was a terrible sentence.
Being a duo helps with that because there's less people on the sideline. But also, I think knowing each other and trusting that I can leave Ellen out on stage for a few minutes without giving her much, and she's fine, and vice versa, helps a lot. I think the audiences are like half on board. I said last week, it was like during a couple of those moments, it was like you could feel, I don't know, I could feel, and maybe I'm projecting on the audience, but I could feel like some people's brains going like, oh, they're dying up there. Like they've forgotten what to say. They're locking up. And it definitely wasn't that at all. It was like, let's just hold this and see what happens.
Yeah, it was a really like nice moment. And I could feel some audience members like tensing, like, oh crap, they haven't said anything.
Well, they're very used to rapid fire.
Yeah.
So is it hard to get accustomed to that? Are you comfortable with that space on stage?
Yeah, I am. And I think we were talking about this after that show and sensing that discomfort. I mean, really, that's on us because we need to make the audience comfortable, I think, in those silences and recognize that we're comfortable. And so somehow communicating that a bit better is...
Yeah.
We got to work on that. But I totally am. I love being silent. I love sitting and kind of figuring it out on stage, which hopefully isn't boring, you know, for someone to watch.
It's not.
Yeah, well, I always love it.
Most of us have experienced that before, and it can be awesome.
Yeah, I really like seeing what someone finds out of that. So that's been... That sounds like we're working on one thing so far. Yeah. We've just said like one thing. No, just not talking to each other.
Yeah. We're working up to a whole 25-minute set where we just stare at each other.
Yeah.
Don't say anything. It's going to be amazing.
It's
going to
be so awesome. We're going to find so much.
Yeah.
It's basically going to be the score without music.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or movement.
Silent movie score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we won't... And no movement either. So we'll just stand still.
So how has it been, you know, building trust with each other as improvisers, given your relationship, you know, off stage?
That's been easy.
Easy, easy?
Yeah, for me. That was maybe the easiest part, I think, was just...
Diving right in
yeah, and not having to worry about that. Dan worried, though. He worried a lot.
Sure. I worry all the time. it was pretty easy. Yeah, I think we were on the same page with a lot of improv stuff anyway. And it's not like this is the first time we've talked about improv together either, you know?
I'm sure.
I started 2-3 years ago, something like that. Ellen had been doing it longer. But since then, I mean, we've been together. So it's always been like talking about what we liked and what we don't like, and not necessarily, and this is now in the context of working with each other, and there's just already enough overlap that it...
Yeah, I feel like if Dan was uncomfortable with something, he probably expressed it to me at some point, and while we're on stage, I hopefully would remember and not do that. But like a good example, I think, is a scene that we did in our last set on Friday where like we were looking at the stars or something and I saw a constellation and Dan's like, oh, that's Cassiopeia. And I was like, oh, do you know the story of Cassiopeia? And he started talking and I was like, oh, he just wants to keep talking. And like, I could sense that immediately. And even though we'd never talked about this sort of situation, I was like, no, I'm just going to let him talk forever and see what happens.
Yeah. So I ended up telling like a 4.5-minute story.
Yeah. The constellation ended up being by the clock at Huge. And so you can watch the time countdown. And I was like, ooh, wow, he's talked a long time.
Yeah. I probably had more in me. I don't know. That was, playing
but
pretty close
okay,
to myself.
Right?
It was totally fine. Yeah. I really enjoy, I mean, I enjoyed that scene a lot, but also like in my life, I enjoy really long jokes that don't really... to have a lot of payoff. Same with puns.
Oh.
We were talking about earlier, right? Like a lot of build up for like just not that much. And like
no,
the joke is that like
payoff.
Yeah, you like don't get a ton out of it. But
and there
you
was
talk
like
for
zero
like four...
payoff with that story.
Yeah.
You told
I think I even
Friday
like
too.
Undercut the end and it was like, long story short, now there's a constellation.
Yeah. But I, you know, that sort of trust you get in other improv groups too once you get to know people. And I think like
it takes a while.
Oh yeah. It totally takes a while, but you know, I think playing with people, but then also getting to know them outside of just an improv stage really, really helps. And so I think that that's where it's been really nice to been able to have that history already with you. And then we don't have to, you know, spend all this time kind of getting used to that.
Yeah, we don't have to hang out.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about
things. We've
already
done that part.
Oh, thank God. All right.
Well, you already know each other.
Yeah,
yeah, true. That's the truth.
It is the truth.
You mentioned an edit that Jill Bernard gave you. Do you want to explain what that edit is? What it's like?
It's there's a name for it.
Yeah, she didn't have a name when she gave it to us. I think
ghost edit.
I think someone has called it a ghost edit, and maybe her later. I don't know. But it's essentially like you have a scene, and then the moment comes when you want to edit it. And the person who wants to edit it just goes neutral, whatever that means for that person, although that's consistent, you know, throughout the show, and changes position on the stage and then initiates a new scene. And during that time of going neutral and moving, the person who did not initiate continues that scene as if the person were still there. Mm-hmm. And so what I like about it, one thing, is that it really helps move us around the stage. Like, you're forced to start a new scene somewhere else. And it also sets, by having the person who is not initiating continue to interact with the person who left and their mm-hmm. ghost, as it were, it really sets sort of the position of the end of that scene on the stage. And so if you want to go back to that scene, it's easy to go occupy that space again, and now we're back in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it cuts the crap out of a lot of initiations, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the, like, hey, you, what's up, sort of initiation. Because if the person's moving to a new space on the stage and they're initiating, it has to be clear. It has to be not forceful, but, you know, it has to.
Sure, yeah.
It has to be a real initiation, and you have to offer something substantial, you know. And so I like it because I think we immediately jump to something,
yeah,
and are able to hold on to it.
Yeah, it has to be clear enough that the other person knows it's not the same scene.
Yeah,
that, and the audience as well.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
well, it seems like a much more elegant transition than your standard, you know, running across the stage. I mean,
yeah.
Would you guys agree with that? That it's a true transition as opposed to just a cut in.
I hope so.
Something new.
That is
that'd be good.
That'd be great, yeah, if it was, you know, elegant. And I think so. I mean, I actually like swipes sometimes, especially mm-hmm. when you get a really good punchline or something, and you're able to.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I those are like super satisfying to me.
Not that a regular sweep is a bad way
yeah,
to edit.
No,
but it just seems like this fits what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think swiping for us would be hard.
Be harder, yeah. It does. One thing I found with the ghost edit, it is a little bit harder to like react to a button,
mm-hmm.
like, because yeah, it's not as big a move. Like, boom, there's the joke, and now there's a big movement. Like, everybody gets to laugh, and we know the scene's over. Versus, right, like, oh, that one dude's quiet now and walking slowly.
But having said that, that supports, you know, more grounded,
yeah,
like, you know, solid scene work, yeah, as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just go for the easy jokes, Dan.
Go for the long, not very good jokes.
4.5 minute constellation.
I like buttons, though. Yeah. I do. Yeah, we had a good button once, but I think we were blacked out on it. That's probably like our one and only button.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we had this show too, but yeah.
Sure.
So is that something you're working towards? Also, is more grounded scene work?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not great at that, and I think Ellen is good at that.
I like doing it, so I'm fine helping you, yeah, you people that need help with it, it sounds like. I mean, we could, yeah. I definitely need help with it, but I enjoy doing it. So I always like doing more grounded scene work. If anyone offers to do grounded scene work with me, I want to do more of it.
Yeah. I always find it's just so much more impressive to me to watch, to get, you know, maybe it's not a laugh a minute, but you get like a 4 or 5 minute scene, and at the end,
yeah,
something brings it together that's so real and makes so much sense that it hits you harder, mm-hmm, I think. And I'm still not great at it, but I like working towards it.
I think you're good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm. So here's a more philosophical question,
okay,
that I've been wanting to ask people for a while, but why do you think it is that the emotion that we typically go for as performers, improvisers, is funny? Why do you think it is that that's the thing that we shoot for naturally, and that it's harder to go for the other emotions?
That's funny, because that's not the emotion I go,
yeah,
for. Like,
well, and that's kind of why I wanted to ask you guys, because I was kind of noticing.
So, So you mean the emotion that you're going for from
the audience?
The audience, as you're trying to
evoke a comedic response, as opposed to a different kind of emotion. Most performers, like, I need to be funny, and it's as opposed to I want to evoke an emotional connection or something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
I guess because I never thought I was very funny, mm-hmm. and so the idea of shooting for funny is not probably the best strategy for me. Mm-hmm. But I really, like Dan was saying earlier, I really appreciate the jokes that come almost as like a surprise. You're like, oh my God, yes. Do you know what I mean? And that almost comes more from like, it's like truth in comedy, guys. Like, do you know, like if we're truthful, like there's comedy in there. Do you
know that? Yeah, I've heard of that.
I've heard that.
But I was about to be like, oh God, it's going to sound just like that. But I think that's true. Like if, you know, I'm watching a scene that really gets to me, that's like, oh God, this reminds me just like my family. Oh, like in mm-hmm. a not good way. But then it's going to be 10 times funnier if mm-hmm. they're able to find something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why I shoot for it. Also because I'm not good at funny.
That's a good point. I think to get back to your question.
Didn't I?
Not to undercut you, but why do people go for funny? You don't. No, that's.
Oh, so, why do people go for funny? I did answer that badly. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. There's no right or wrong.
You're dying out there. You're dying.
Help me, Dan.
I would say I probably go for funny more than Ellen does. I don't know. I think it's a clearer. You get a clearer indicator that you are successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Everybody laughs, and that's mm-hmm. it's a loud, visible thing. You go, like, yes, I achieved funny, versus. If you achieved making someone think about their life, mm-hmm. You're maybe not gonna know that mm-hmm. as easily. So it's harder to know. It's both, you know, less. It can be less satisfying if you're trying to get that feedback, as well as harder to know when you're successful just based on audience reactions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably, I would guess, easier to cultivate that skill of trying to get funny out.
I think it's also because doesn't it feel good when you realize that you said something funny?
Yeah,
and I mean that feedback is one thing, but it's you feel good about yourself making someone else feel good. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a goal as well.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's a lot of why people get into improv in the first place and then
totally.
And then later decide, oh, there's maybe other things to go for, but like mm-hmm. I don't know. For me, it was like watching improv and going, oh, that looks fun. They're having fun up there. I'm enjoying watching them. I want to have fun too and make people laugh. And then it wasn't until, you know, you get some more experience behind your improv that you realize there's these other emotions you can pull out of people that are equally or more satisfying.
Like terror?
Terror. I don't think I've ever done that. That would be amazing if I could.
If you could actually terrify the audience.
If I could, scare people? That would be good. I don't know if I could do that. I'm not a very intimidating individual.
What do you mean?
I'm the shy, quiet guy.
That actually, you have to that's worry true. About the most. That's true.
Believe me.
Ooh. Put that knife away.
Philip does terror.
Yeah. But even like, even improvised. You know, horror movies
mm-hmm.
are still funny.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is great. They're great. But, I don't think I've ever seen an improvised scary story that is legitimate. And been like, ooh, I'm scared now. Did that answer your question? I feel like it's pretty long-winded.
No, I think you're right. I think back to, and I think I brought this up during the Jill Bernard interview, but I'm going to bring it up again. I think back to a quote by Harry Shearer that I'm probably going to misquote slightly, that comedians do what they do so they can control how they're laughed at.
Sure.
Totally.
And I wonder if that
has a good quote. I like that.
Steal that quote.
Stealing it.
Yeah, steal it. That's what I did. Cool. So you guys came from Philly.
That's true.
We did.
How is the Twin Cities improv scene different from Philadelphia, and what's the culture like here compared to the city of brotherly love?
Sure. You go.
Mia? The hot topic right now, I don't know if you guys saw this, Chris Gethardt's piece about how Philly is the worst city to perform comedy in.
What? When did that come out?
Like, I did not see that.
Like 2 days ago. It's been an uproar. Maybe what? Just in Philly.
Oh.
His points weren't bad. It was more the headline. But,
sure.
It's a more aggressive city in every way. And that definitely translated into comedy and the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so both, I mean, his piece was mostly about the, how the audience, if they decide to go and be angry and negative, they're going to go full on and do the best they
can.
Ruthless. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But also I think the improv is a little more aggressive there than here. And that I think also it's, I think the difference is pulling from the culture as well. The Midwest and Minnesota, the people are nicer and calmer and more polite. And so I think it translates into the improv as well.
Which is a good thing. Like it's a good and bad thing.
Depending. Yeah. I mean,
you know,
yeah.
I was really surprised when I came here how nice people were on stage. And I don't mean like Philly improvisers were mean, but I didn't feel like I had to... what's the word I'm looking for? People shared the stage very well, and I felt like they were really giving, and they wanted, you know, to see your initiation and to see what you had to offer and everything. And sometimes with Philly, you know, you had to be a little bit more aggressive, I think, in scene work, depending on the particular improviser.
Sure.
I make my fellow Philly improvisers sound terrible. I don't mean it that way at all. But I think what I'm trying to say is I think I agree with Dan in terms of the styles.
But yeah, then you can get some, like... I think the improv is a bit weirder there in Philly as well, like, and maybe that's matched with the aggressiveness, but it's just like it goes a little more full on into
like organic transitions and stuff you don't see very often here. I've noticed that being a pretty big difference.
Yeah, actually. Organic improv got really big while we were there. Yeah. I haven't seen it here. I know someone, Josh Kaplan, taught a drop-in, which I didn't go to, but I know he did one on it.
Yeah.
Jill Bernard once said in a class that Minnesotans were too... timid to get it or something like that. I don't want to misquote her, but she sort of said they couldn't handle it.
Jill Bernard said all Minnesotans are really bad.
Yeah, she said all Minnesotans
improv generally
are terrible. And I
terrible
hate it
improv, and I hate it here.
And then she broke a glass and slashed the closest person to her.
Yeah, she stabbed someone.
No. Classic Bernard.
I think also the culture here is, you know, there's a lot of improv theaters in Minneapolis, and that is awesome because it's really cultivated an audience and people who know what improv is and they enjoy watching it. And I think Philly, the atmosphere, at least by the time we left like a year ago, it was still, you know, they were still cultivating an audience, and the theater that we performed with didn't have a set space yet. Philly Improv Theater didn't.
I think they're getting it in January, but
they got one.
In my brain they're like Philly Improv Theater is like 2 years behind huge in terms of a business sort of idea. So they were operating out of the same theater, but it was like a rented space, and it was, you know, 2 weeks out of the month instead of every week. And the audiences are still largely other improvisers. I won't say all, like definitely nights when I didn't know everybody in the audience, but there were a lot of nights when I was like, I know everybody.
And I think it's grown a lot actually since we left, because there's a whole nother improv theater there now since we left Philly.
Wow.
So yeah.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with the audiences when I came to Minneapolis too. Yeah. So I think that was another difference as well. I'm trying to think of anything else. They're both great places.
They're both great. I mean, I think it's fair to say we both loved Philly a lot. That's where I started improv. It's great. Love it there.
Yeah.
I would say it's great here too. Yeah. Everywhere is great. I love everyone. Yay.
But the South.
But yeah.
No.
Except people from Atlanta. There's a lot more genre. Yeah, I'm all just, that's what I'm digging.
Just her, really. Just hate her.
Genre and narrative are a lot bigger here.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Than in Philly.
Although I think that's changing in Philly, too.
Yeah, the new theater that Ellen referenced is Figment Theater, which just started after we left. The shows that they've started doing have been a lot more genre.
Yeah.
Which is probably good, because it fills a hole, right?
Yeah.
And I've been wondering if genre shows aren't easier to market to people who don't know what improv are.
I think they are.
I think they are.
Yeah.
So give someone to hook into versus like, hey, the Herald team's playing tonight.
Yeah.
It's like, who's Herald? Like that's meaningless.
I mean, it's hard enough to explain what a Herald is to an improviser if they don't know.
Yeah. It's true.
Versus like, here's improvised Star Trek. Oh, okay. I know what Star Trek is.
Yeah.
Like you're a good chunk of the way at understanding what you're going to see.
First, let me explain what improv is. Then let me explain long form. Then let me explain a Herald.
Yeah.
Do you want to go?
Are you aware of group games? No? Okay. How about Beats? No? Still? No.
Hmm. Do you know they serve beer? They serve beer. Yeah,
they serve beer and it'll probably be funny.
Yeah.
Just keep it simple.
Yeah.
But I think that that's a real good point about genre and narrative, you know, is that you can sell it to audiences. And so bring in even new people who haven't experienced improv before. So that's a great thing. Maybe that's why they have such good audiences here.
Maybe. I don't know. We have to ask the board of directors.
That's not us.
Yeah. But Philly's great. I hope it didn't sound like we didn't like it. It's wonderful.
No, place. It sounds like you enjoy it.
Where it's, it's kind of, as I was saying, like they're a couple years behind, I think. That's sort of a good and bad. Like it's nice to be here in a place that's a permanent place. With permanent audiences, but it was also really interesting to feel like we were at the beginning of something in Philly, even though, I mean, Philly Improv Theater had been going before we had moved there.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like while we were there, it was really sort of at a crucial uptick in its life.
Well, Iron Lung started, you know, one of the groups I was in Philly, we weren't the first independent, not affiliated with the theater, I mean, team, at all, but we started having regular shows. We were performing, doing bar prov like every week for a while. You remember that? And that was a real exciting time because other groups started to see that, and there started to be this whole subculture developing of just shows everywhere and people trying out new groups and things like that. So that was real exciting to be in a city that was just starting to realize, oh my God, we can do this, you know, let's do it everywhere.
And like four different people are producing a weekly show that, you know, 10 people show up to, but it's like, you know, everybody's excited and it's happening and
you're just making it happen.
It's like we'll grind it out. Like I don't care how many people show up. I got all these groups, we'll put it together and we'll perform for each other. And that's fun. It's nicer to perform at a theater that's got 50 people watching it, but there's something kind of exciting about, you know, performing for five people at a bar.
In a gay sports bar?
In a gay sports bar.
Which I definitely did.
Yeah.
Loved it.
So how's it been performing at the Triple Double on Friday nights over at Huge Theater? How's it been performing with the other duo groups?
Awesome. Yeah, we only had, we've had one show so far with Triple Double, and it's really cool, I think, because it is a little isolating, I think, to be in a duo and to hang out, you know, see other duos doing their thing. It is so great. So I actually really love that, you know, Butch thought it up, and it's a way to celebrate duos, you know?
Yeah, it's been great. We had, like we said, we had one show last week. We have one show this Friday. I don't know when this episode will drop. We have a show this Friday.
Yeah, and we might, August maybe.
And they... duos have been great. Last week was Polar Bear Centric.
Imaginary
Imaginary Antiquary, whose name I forgot when I tried to.
We messed that name up so much. I'm sorry.
But they're both great. And this week it's Tarantino and Southmouth.
Yeah, those would be great.
The aforementioned Jill Mernard is in Tarantino.
There's a lot of good duos out there. So it's been really cool to.
With Butch.
To see him do their thing.
Yeah, it's fun. Butch put it together. And it's got a cool basketball name. Right? That's a basketball term.
Sure is.
Yeah, look at that knowledge. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sports.
Would you care iced tea?
Tell a 4.5 minute story about
triple doubles?
I'd love to.
That's going to be our set, right? We just set Dan up for really long stories.
Yeah.
So what's next for you guys after triple doubles over?
We have a show in August at the Monsters of Improv show at Honey.
Over at Honey.
Yep.
Which is awesome. Michael Delaval is...
Yeah. It's so great.
It is great.
So we're excited to do that.
That's on a Wednesday. We'll say the 21st.
That sounds great.
He's making it up.
No, that's actually the right date. Because that's the close date for my house.
Yeah.
You know. So you're going to be there, right?
I'll probably be there.
Yeah. That's right. We're closing on a house this Friday when we perform.
Yeah, it's actually true.
Really?
We're closing on a house and going and performing at Triple Double.
That's going to be the best day ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little tired.
Just be exhausted. Yeah. That'll be our 25 minutes staring at each other.
You're going to be on stage and still miming, signing.
Yeah, your name. Exactly.
And then we'll, you know, I'll have Dan do like a 10-minute riff on everything we need to fix.
Yeah, I'll just do a list of projects.
Yeah, a list of home improvement projects.
The audience is going to be like, is this funny?
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. Truth and comedy, guys. We got to do this shit.
No, we really have to do it. I like that. Yeah. So we're doing Monsters of Improv. We just submitted to GoGo a show idea that we really like, that if it doesn't get into GoGo, maybe we'll explore other avenues.
Yeah.
Called, are we going to talk about
sure,
it?
Sure, yeah.
Called Third Wheel, which is just us and then a guest, so we can make someone feel idea. Really That's uncomfortable cool. each yeah. time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I really, I don't know. I like shows that get new people together.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that's because I'm new here, but I'm always like, how can we get more mm-hmm. people to do things together that haven't done things before?
Totally.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah, I really like the idea of, you know, people playing with other people that mm-hmm. they've never played with before. And so we're looking at other ways to do that in the cities as well. But, yeah. you know, that's one of the ways with just this duo specifically.
Yeah.
So
I did My Friend's Friend's Friend.
Yes, you did.
Drew
yeah.
Kirsten.
Yeah.
And that was super fun. I had never gotten to play with Joe Bozick and
yeah.
Joe and Drew had never even met, and yeah. Megan had never played with any of them either. And Megan and I had only played together in auditions.
Yeah, so, I think it's so great. Yeah. I mean, we're kind of a good example of just being lazy, and you know, we knew each other,
yeah.
so that was like an easy route to kind of explore what we wanted to do with improv together. But there's mm-hmm. so many people yeah. in the Twin Cities that so are many. Really good at improv. Yep. So, and I think. Especially around here, I feel like people are more reserved. You know, they're not like maybe as always open to asking someone like, hey, let's
do something.
Yeah, let's do yeah, something, yeah. you know. And so I think it would be great to facilitate that a bit yeah. more. So.
Plus, if you want, I can wait to drop this episode until after you do that so that people won't know about the awkward long pauses and silences. So your third wheel will come on stage and be like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah.
Just say something. They're dying out there. Edit.
Sweep it.
What is this ghost edit they're doing?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
And now is the time in the show where I throw the microphone over to Philip Simondet for a brand new...
The newest feature on the show.
Feature on the Ooh. Show
called... I like new features.
Philip's Corner.
Philip's Corner. Welcome Yay. To Philip's Corner.
It's Philip's Corner.
It's so cozy Thank in you. Here.
Oh, yeah.
I love the yeah. fireplace.
Yeah, thank well, you. We don't serve beer. Sometimes it's funny.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I see it on the plaque.
This is where I stare you awkwardly.
Okay.
And
okay.
form a question, and then you answer it.
Okay. Okay. I'm staring back.
Do you want both of us to answer, or just one of us?
I'll do one at a time, and okay. then I'll do one together.
Dan, okay. you're distracting him.
Sorry.
Ellen.
Yes.
What's your favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
Oh, I've never seen a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
What?
That I know about. I don't think I have. So, the first one I see, maybe? The first one I see, probably, I'll fall in love
with. It will be, because once you see it, you will love it so yeah. much.
What's your favorite?
I don't know.
You don't have one?
I don't know.
Bloodsport?
They all run together.
Is that a real
Bloodsport.
One?
Bloodsport.
Yeah. That sounds yeah. like a fake
It's probably
name.
Bloodsport.
Are you serious?
No, that's... Those are the movies that he real. Made. They all blended into one movie. Yeah. All
right. Then
Hard Target? That's another one? Or is that Steven Seagal?
Steven Seagal.
I get them mixed up.
Okay, let me come up with one then.
It's actually, it's probably JCVD.
Is that how he's packaging himself?
That was a movie he made in the last 5 years where he plays a parody of himself, essentially.
Oh,
I haven't seen yeah, it, but I bet it would be up your alley.
That's my favorite
it,
one.
It like
then.
Went to Sundance or something.
Oh, yeah. You, like, is that how I like movies?
You like Arnie shit.
Dan.
Who?
Philip.
What is the most useful skill that you could acquire if you were a ninja to use in your real life?
Oh, good question.
Disappearing and leaving a place.
When would you use that? Just
I was
curiosity.
Like at a party. I didn't want to be there anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Just smoke bomb my way out. Instead of like looking at my phone and then waiting
really
another
busy.
2 minutes and like eating a pretzel And then looking at my phone as I walk silently out the door.
Fun fact, that's how we wanted to exit our wedding once we finished our vows. We thought about getting smoke bombs and just throwing smoke bombs down and then disappearing.
We had a lot of good ideas.
Yeah. We got married outside, though. It didn't pan out.
Yeah.
What if you were stuck in, like, the kitchen and you wanted to exit? You threw down a smoke bomb. You'd only be able to move, like, 2 feet. Right? Then you'd have to throw down another smoke bomb.
I feel like if you were good enough at being a ninja. Like,
2 more feet.
But if he's ninja level.
If I'm ninja level, it doesn't matter where I am. I'm gone, right?
Okay.
I thought you were going to say, like, what if you throw a smoke bomb down the kitchen? People will be terrified. It's like a kitchen
smoke alarm will go off.
Oh, no. Well, and you'll scare people.
It's true, though. I mean, they never show the after effect of a ninja throwing down a smoke bomb. They always show what happens to the ninja next, not what happens to the people.
Yeah.
They could be coughing and waving.
That's a great idea. You know, explore that world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's in those smoke bombs? Is it poisonous? Is it like a carbon monoxide
situation?
Maybe
those people all get some breathing difficulties later on in life, and they curse the ninja who's at that party. Yeah.
Oh, man.
You want to rethink this?
Okay. On further consideration, it would be breathing underwater.
Oh, okay.
I was unaware ninjas could do that.
Yeah. I know that because someone gave a report in, I want to say, like, 5th grade or 7th grade around that time about ninjas, and was very convinced that they could train to breathe, to hold their breath for 10 minutes underwater. And, like, the teacher was like, oh, that's probably, like, a myth that surrounded them. I was like, no, they could do it. They could do it. And, like, they went kind of back and forth dancing around. She's like, I think that's probably a myth. No, 10 minutes. I read it. it's not happening, buddy. So that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
I actually don't know what I would use it for, other than to
baths?
Impress people. Baths? But I don't really like baths.
If you liked baths, you would if you could breathe underwater.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a good skill.
All right, yep. I'm sticking with it.
All right. And then I promise you one question for both of you to answer simultaneously.
Okay. Oh.
Favorite cheese?
Cheddar.
Thank you so much.
You guys want to do some improv?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it. Awesome. Next up, Pat! No, Mom, it's great. I'm sorry.
Well, you can have the whole dish because no one else wanted to try it either. And
oh, you know,
the picnic's over. I'm not going to, your dad won't touch it. You take it home.
You know, it's been so hot. I haven't had a big appetite. I just feel like I really don't need it.
Well, you save it for later. You just put it in the microwave, heat it right back up. It'll be good tomorrow.
You know what? Okay, I'll just take it. You know, I'm just going to take it and I'll eat all of it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won't be there, but I'll definitely be eating it, you know, all of it. And thinking about how much I like watermelon and how I appreciate that you...
Margaret, don't force her to take our food.
She wants it. I made it for her special
Nobody
watermelon.
Wants that dog food. No, I told you that.
I would love to take it. I mean, Mom's worked so hard and I just... It's so sweet of you to remember, you know, my favorite melon.
Carolyn, you don't have to pander to your mother.
I'll give you the recipe so you can make it yourself. It's just Alpo... watermelon rinds, cayenne pepper, and 3-week-old cheese.
3 week?
3 week.
Margaret!
We had that cheese, that cheddar cheese, that hid in the back of that cupboard drawer.
Alpo and 3-week-old cheese. What are you thinking? Are you trying to poison all of us?
Dad, she's just gonna cry. Dad.
You know what? I am so immune to those tears.
I
am so tired of all of this.
I figure it has all the nutrition a dog needs, so it should be a great nutrition.
Should be great
so
for your daughter.
Base.
Should be great for your husband. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it's got nutrients in there. It's for growing dogs.
Growing dogs.
Mom, I'm not even growing anymore. I'm 26. I'm not even a dog.
That's right. She is a lonely, lonely woman.
Wait. So Mom's feeding me dog food. And now Dad's to say I'm lonely?
Well, I'm sorry. You're very happily alone.
Yes, thank you. Okay, there's no...
It's a choice. I understand.
Yeah, it's a real choice. Okay, so I like living by myself and eating melons.
Dad, Cheryl said she was fine alone. She told me yesterday. She said it's fine.
Yeah, I know. That's what she says. But You know, Jackson, sometimes you can't believe everything you hear.
Oh, you told me I should trust my family, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Trust your family.
All right, so she said she was fine. I'm right here.
No, she's fine. She's great.
Okay.
She's strong. She's tough.
Dad, I can say these things myself, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
I'm fine, okay? I'm strong.
See?
Are you sure?
Yes.
Of course you are, honey.
My history teacher, I think he's single.
No, I don't want to date your history teacher, and I'm strong, okay?
He's good looking, and he's only 46.
You could bake him a hot dish.
Yeah, I think
I gave you the recipe.
Mom, I don't even like hot dish, okay?
He's recently divorced, and he cries in class, too, so you guys could do that together.
He's a very sensitive, emotional man.
I'm hungry all of a sudden. I'll eat that. Mom, will you pass
it? Yeah, you just dig right in, sweetheart.
Jackson?
Yeah?
That's the sound of giving up.
First Wednesday of the month?
That'll work.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, got that business out of the way.
Good.
Get on with this potluck, huh? What did everybody bring? I brought rhubarb pie.
I bought some bars, 7-layer bars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks. Everyone's welcome.
Thanks, Nancy.
Secret recipe.
Thank you.
I brought a cooler full of ice. I figured you could put your beverages in there.
Yeah, we got to keep that cool.
Yeah, it keeps the nice beverages.
I forgot to bring anything.
What? Oh. What the fuck, Jim?
What, Jim? Are you fucking kidding me?
It's a potluck. It's not a goddamn charity.
Well,
Jim, I was fucking slaving away over these bars.
And they look wonderful, Karen.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Of course she always makes great bars.
They're goddamn amazing bars.
Yeah, and look at this rhubarb pie. There's still steam coming off
it. It looks wonderful, Jim. Looks wonderful.
I know. It's always wonderful.
So what did you bring that looks wonderful?
I forgot to make anything.
Nothing? You don't even have a thing that you were gonna make?
No.
That's bullshit.
I know.
Did you bring an object to assist other things, like ice?
Yeah, I mean, ice is really useful to cool things down.
Ice is super useful.
I know.
Did you bring anything you could cool down?
Third Jim brought ice.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, Third Jim said that.
Stopped on my way here.
You can see how cold it is from here.
Yeah.
That's great ice.
Yeah.
Last night, I was going to make a pot roast.
That would have been great.
That would have been amazing. I love pot roast. Love it.
I know.
Yeah. So you just decided you don't care about...
No,
us?
Of course I care about all of you.
We're trying to save the squirrels.
Yep.
And to do that, we need to eat after our meetings.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
so, I mean, we've got two desserts and ice, which is a pretty round meal.
But then my grandmother died.
Okay.
And
so did she die, like, when you would have been cooking
Does
the pot
she
roast?
Know how to make the pot roast?
Yep.
Did she burn the roast?
And then my wife divorced me.
Did your wife, was it like an oral tradition recipe? Like, was your wife or grandma the only people who knew the pot roast recipe?
Do you only have one recipe in your house?
You should have more than one recipe.
As a part of the settlement, my wife got the recipe book and the stove.
Have you heard of the internet?
Yeah, do you not have internet?
Allrecipes.com. They have all recipes.
Have you never been to Rent-A-Stove? The Rent-A-Stove Center?
Yeah.
My wife got the half the town that Rent-A-Stove is on.
I love that side of the town. Can we just have a moment? That is the best side of town.
Such a good side of the town.
And my grandma, when she died, she willed the internet to my brother.
Oh my God. I did not know your grandmother was the one who owned the internet?
Yeah, she was. But my brother's...
She was Al Gore? Your grandmother was
Al
Gore?
Oh my God. Al Gore's dead.
Yep.
Al Gore's dead.
Guys, we should have a potluck in honor of Al Gore.
I brought this rhubarb pie.
I brought these 7-layer bars.
I brought this bag of ice.
I didn't bring anything.
Oh.
Holy shit.
Jim.
Yeah, I'm thirsty.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You want some water ice?
Yeah, I would love some water ice.
All right, Jerry, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you going to get it? Are you going to buy it?
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll buy it.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Give me one cherry. Give me a water ice with cherry.
One cherry, come on.
There you go.
Thanks.
What?
Oh, there's something in this.
What's wrong with it?
I don't know. There's something in it. I feel like that Jolly Man stuck something in it.
Hey, Jolly Man.
It's like a...
Yep.
Did you stick something in my wife's water ice?
Sure did.
Yeah, he stuck something in it.
Yeah, I can't... Can you see it?
Yeah.
It looks like a... What is that? Like a finger? Is that a finger?
Jolly Man.
Yep.
You stick your finger in my water ice?
I put my finger in it when I put in a feather.
It's a feather and a finger in there.
There's a feather and a finger?
Well, my finger, but only a feather now.
Wait, your finger turned into a feather and you put it in my water ice?
Yep.
Why?
Jellyman's a bird man.
No, I just found a feather on my way to work today.
Like Robin Hood?
Sort of like Robin Hood, and I'm giving it back to the poor.
We're poor now?
We're poor now.
We're poor now?
You're eating here.
Rita's water ice? It's where everybody goes.
How do you know about us?
How did he know we're poor?
How did he know we're poor? Do I look poor?
Okay, sidebar.
Yeah.
Do we look poor?
We must look poor.
I mean, I know I got these clothes at TJ Maxx, but
I could really use a feather, but how did he know that?
I mean, it's a good accessory, definitely.
Yeah, no, like, I could put it on some clothes, I could cover a hole here or there, but like, how would he know that? Because we look really good right now.
All right,
we look really rich right now.
Yeah, I know. Big time.
Oh.
All right, sidebar over.
Okay. Listen, we're not poor.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We have a lot of money.
Yeah, we got big time bucks.
I could buy like 2 million of
these
feathers.
I could buy this whole water ice stand. Yeah,
I could buy it and burn it down. I could, because it means so little to me because I have so much money.
Your credit score is 510.
Hang on, sidebar. How did he know our credit score?
I don't know. Do you think he's running a side business?
I don't know. Did you give him your social security number when you ordered the water ice?
Why? Of course.
Okay. Don't do that. Stop doing that.
That's how he takes payment, though.
No, it's not. It's just a thing people ask you that you always give them that you're not supposed to.
But it's such a cool number.
No, I...
69, 69.
Yeah.
69, 69, 6. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the best social security number. But you should stop giving it out to people, okay?
But it's so badass.
No, because they use it, and that's how we have a bad credit score, and that's how we're poor. And that's how he probably knows it. Because he probably ran a credit check as soon as you gave it.
All right, well, let's figure that out.
Okay. Separate over.
Did you run my credit score because I gave you my social security number?
I sure did.
You were right.
Ding, ding. Hi, can I get a grape water ice? Here's my license and social security card.
Sure, of course.
You can give my change to these poor people over here. They look like they need it.
How did this guy know? Hey, excuse me, sir?
Yeah.
How did you... we're not poor, but what made you think that?
Yeah. Like, how did you assume that we're poor?
Oh, well, I looked you up and down. I quickly calculated your credit score. I pictured the house that you guys... Well, apartment, let's be honest, that you guys came from.
Okay, hang on a second. Sidebar.
Yeah.
Did you give this guy our address?
Yeah, of course.
This guy off the street, you let him know where we live before we went in here?
Yeah.
But he knows we're not even home. Like, he could have stolen all of our meager possessions at this point.
It's such a sweet address we've got.
Okay, whatever.
666 6th Street. It's the number of the beast and then a bonus 6. It's metal.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just, I don't think we should be giving these numbers out to people.
Okay. Well, it's too late now.
Yeah. We'll talk about this later.
Okay.
Sidebar over. Yeah, so thanks for the compliment about our place. It's just a loner place, you know. Or not loner, I mean a side...
Like, I mean, it's like our summer home.
It's like our summer home, except it's like for poor people.
Does that mean
people,
you're like squatting? That just means you're squatting, right?
Oh, okay, sidebar. Did you tell him we were squatting?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Well, I didn't think he knew our address. I didn't think it mattered. Just be like, oh, it's, you know how like poor people like to slum it? Or if rich people like to slum it?
I mean,
yeah, it's like we're slumming it. Like rich people decide to squat.
Okay, but when you said that, did you call us poor people like you did just now?
It was a slip of the tongue.
Okay.
Definitely did not call us poor.
You gotta tighten that tongue up. It's too slippery.
All right. Well, yeah, we're just squatting for fun, like I said, because we're poor people.
We're rich people.
Sidebar.
Oh, yeah. 1 second, guys. Is my water ice ready?
Yeah. But your license is expired.
My license is expired.
Yeah.
Oh, good catch.
Yep. I just want to let you know that, and Do you ever notice how poor people are different from us?
Right? Just right on the surface, you can totally tell.
Yep. All right, sidebar over.
Sidebar over. Hey, there's a finger and a feather in my water.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Gentlemen.
Yes?
Yes?
Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
I didn't call this meeting. Did you call this meeting?
No, I thought you called it.
No, I didn't call it. Did you call it?
I did not call this meeting.
Did you call this meeting?
I called this meeting.
Oh, gentlemen.
That's right.
Gentlemen.
Gentlemen, there's a serious issue that we need to discuss.
Oh.
Gentlemen's meeting of gentlemen needed to be called by a gentleman?
Correct, gentle sir.
Is it a gentleman issue?
It is a total gentleman issue. It's gotten so hot lately that I've...
How hot is it?
Well, I recently urinated on my own scrotum.
Oh!
That is very hot, and not something a gentleman would do ordinarily.
The opposite.
Very ungentlemanly.
Ungentlemanly.
Self-scrotal urination.
That's right. We need to address this issue and solve it immediately.
All right. I'm thinking pocket squares. But?
Pocket squares.
No, pocket squares are a great idea.
Yeah, very gentlemanly.
Very gentlemanly.
But instead of in your pocket, between your penis and scrotum.
Absolutely.
That way it catches the urine.
I'm unfamiliar with pocket squares.
I'm wearing a pocket square right now.
Yes. Do you notice Walter's pocket square?
Oh, his handkerchief in the pocket there.
Oh, yes. No. Down here.
Oh.
Well done, Walter.
That
very forward
is gentlemanly,
thinking.
Good sir.
Yes.
I like it. Can you get it personally monogrammed?
Of course.
That's what gentlemen do. Yeah. They have things monogrammed.
Every day I go home and monogram things.
Let me propose another solution to this problem.
All right.
I like it.
Gentlemanly solution. You thought about being a woman.
Oh.
I'm just saying, have you ever seen a skirt? I feel like skirts would be very comfortable in the hot weather.
Yes.
Or a dress.
Yeah,
it would cool
you
down.
Like a cotton skirt. Just think about it. A cotton skirt. Wouldn't that feel nice right now?
That's more breathable.
Very breathable.
Would
very
a breathable? Kilt be okay?
Oh.
I do not want to be banished from the gentlemen's group.
The Scots are not gentlemen.
No.
Have you seen Braveheart?
The Scots are warriors.
A lot of yelling, rude gestures, and they show their bare buttocks to each other.
But they do love each other. They always have, and they always will.
That's true.
I'm just putting it out there. I'm not trying to persuade you either way. I just thought it was a nice solution to this
gentlemanly
problem.
I like this skirt idea, personally.
A skirt idea?
We're going to have to market it, though.
Gentleman's skirt?
Yes. We'll call it Shorts 360.
Oh.
Ooh. Mm. I like that. And then it's like I'm wearing gentlemen. They'll be made out of...
Khaki. They'll
khaki
be khaki.
With pleats?
Yes, a lot of pleats.
How about tweed? Or maybe there are just...
For the winter?
Just tweed patches on the buttocks.
Oh.
Don't choose too warm of a material or we'll be right back in the same issue.
Of course, we're getting off topic.
We can think about winter gentlemen skirts later.
Yeah.
Skirts 360.
This is not a winter problem that I'm having.
We need a summer fabric.
Yes.
A summer gentleman fabric.
I still think a cotton jersey.
Linen.
Linen.
There we go.
Very good, Walter. I'm promoting you to second class gentleman.
Oh, that is such an honor.
Second class. My father never even made second class. Thank you.
Of course, good sir.
I just want to point out that I thought up the skirt solution.
All right, everybody's promoted to gentleman second class.
Oh, now it's meaningless. Why would you do such a thing?
All right, you're demoted, Walter.
Oh,
God. Whew. I know, right?
Whew. Well, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second.
Halftime.
Well, it's in the middle.
Yeah. So we should only be halfway tired.
Oh, that's true. Whew. That's true. We have to put another 50% once we get back out there.
You better recharge your tanks, Buckaroo.
Oh. Jeez. I better, dunk my head in some Gatorade.
Yeah.
Or punch a locker.
Big time.
Or get a, inspirational speech.
All of those things will work really well.
I feel like those would really up me, because right now I'm at least, 85% tired.
Oh, no. That's 35% less than you should be.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I didn't really pace myself for like...
That's your main issue. I've been meaning to talk to you about your pacing.
Well, I wish you'd done that before the game started.
Well, it just didn't seem like the right time beforehand. We were getting that inspirational speech.
Yeah, which we could really use now, BTW.
We only get one a game. It's the rules.
Then why did Coach use up 100% of the inspirational speech
before the game? Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like, you know, if we have to be the ones maintaining this, like, Coach should also be, like, setting that
example. He should have done a 50% inspirational speech.
He should have done a 50% inspirational speech, then 50% at halftime, which is now.
Yeah.
And then...
And I punched all the lockers before the game.
Yeah. I know. It was great. It really rubbed a lot of people.
I was so pumped.
Hey, team.
Hey.
Does anybody have any lockers left?
No.
I'm so sorry.
I punched them all.
Man.
Do you really need to punch one too?
No, I wanted to try to give you guys more inspiration, but I just really blew out all my inspiration in the pregame.
Oh. Yeah. That's
I'm really sorry
thing.
About that.
Oh, it's all right.
But hey, you know what? You guys looked pretty good out there.
Oh.
Pretty good something, I
guess. Pep talk?
Is this a pep talk?
I don't know. You tell me when I'm done. I'm done.
No, I thought we were telling
you. Well, we're telling you.
Oh. Oh, okay. Let's see. If you have any more lockers to punch, you should punch them.
But we don't.
We don't.
It's a problem.
Okay. Well, in that case, do you have helmets that you could...
helmets!
You could smack together and...
Come here!
And then after you do that...
That was okay.
You can pat each other on the back of the head.
Oh.
And that will help you guys get to be better teammates and trust each other more on the field. And I just want you to remember, if you're tired, so's the other team.
Oh.
Oh my gosh, that's a really good and peppy point.
Okay, you're done.
You're done.
Oh, God. I didn't have much left in me.
Oh, good.
Oh, well, that's okay, though.
That's because we don't get a
Because we don't need a
break.
Pep talk after the... Well, actually, if we lose...
Oh, no.
If we lose, we're going to need a pep talk.
By that time, I'll be totally recharged.
Yay!
Hey. And that's why I don't think that a plus three is really pertinent in this situation. So if you could just roll that back.
Yeah, don't waste your plus three on this. You don't need it.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. A plus three would really help me right now. Okay?
No, you rolled a 19. That's enough already.
I think
you
guys are making up rules. You're like, kid sister, make up rules. You know, where's the rule book?
It's right here. Flip.
If you can read it, it's only 150 pages if you want to check for yourself.
Hey, guys, I'm the game master. Let me make the calls, okay? You guys, game master. Stop being rule lawyers.
Fine.
Look, my sister's new. I thought I'd
just
give her helpful bitch.
Just be rules civilians, okay? Live among the rules with me.
Yeah, the plus three might help you, but only if I end up rolling 17 or better.
Okay, well, do your roll then.
Yeah, do the roll.
You have roll to decide Dungeon whether Master. You take the plus three or not first.
Well, you already told us that we can't decide that because we're being too much rules lawyers, so I think it's a bad idea. I vote bad.
I vote bad, too. You're wasting it.
Well, yeah,
vote
bad.
I vote do it.
All right.
Come on. All right. 18.
Oh.
Yay!
Oh, man. Okay, well,
I think you guys are just trying to bring me down. Bring your sister down, you know. You think, oh, I'm a rule lawyer. I can win based on knowing the rules and playing games, but I have it in my heart. Yeah.
Sorry, Kyle. I didn't mean to undercut you.
Well, you did.
I know.
You did totally big time.
I know that you really like Tiffany. I didn't mean to do that in front of her.
What?
I just...
Well, what?
You heard that?
Wait, yeah, I heard that.
That's my name.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, you're in love with my little sister?
Shut up.
What?
No?
I didn't bring her here so that you could ogle her. I brought her here because Jeremy is sick.
Listen, Brandon, there's no ogling going on. Why don't you just back off?
You only invited me here because Jeremy was sick?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And were you picking on me?
Because you like me?
Yes.
Why didn't you say supportive things if you like me?
Because I'm kind of afraid of my positive emotions.
Why didn't you, like, ask me out or say something nice or...
Kevin, he asked you to play the game.
Oh, I feel so stupid.
Me too. I gotta roll the save versus embarrassment.
DC 15.
If you want to date my sister, you're going to have to defeat my elf in a battle to the death.
Come on, Brandon. That's stupid.
William, that is totally fair. If I can't even defeat his elf, what right do I have to call the beautiful Tiffany my lady?
And no invisibility spells.
No invisibility. Are you kidding me? That's like my bread and butter.
He's a mage. There's no way he can stand up to your barbarian.
Will you tell him something he can't do?
Oh, shit. Yeah. You can't use bloodlust.
Yeah.
Oh, snap. Now it's even.
Yeah. What's a barbarian without bloodlust? Just a dude with no shirt on.
That's right. Like a half-orc dumbass.
Yeah. Nice one, William.
Thanks.
Well, that's fine, because the righteous gods of Endor are on my side. Let's do this.
Guys, I just want to let you know, whoever loses is permadead.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to resurrect you this time.
But what if we have a scroll of resurrection?
You're already dead.
Ugh.
No, I'm not going to use it on you.
Tiffany, can we take a sidebar?
Okay, sidebar.
If I trade you my scroll of resurrection and I lose this battle, will you promise to resurrect me?
I don't really use my brother. I'm really conflicted right now.
Brothers come and go. True love only exists once in a lifetime.
Okay, I'll resurrect you.
Okay, thanks. Sidebar over. All right, let's go, Kyle.
Great.
I cast magic missile. A lot.
It hits for... Roll for damage.
Oh, I roll.
It hits for 17 points of damage.
Suck it.
I swallow a flower from the mountaintop of Vermont.
Oh, you're the most powerful mountaintop of all.
And it is. And now he gains artificial bloodlust.
Oh, I said no bloodlust.
But he didn't use his ability. Oh, he used the flower.
It's kind of a loophole.
Sure, it is kind of a loophole. You better kill him this round.
Okay, he's got so much bloodlust. All right, well, I use my cloak of invisibility.
Oh, snap.
Come on. You're going to allow that, Dungeon Master?
You found a way around your rule.
You're right.
That's my turn.
I poke blindly with my spear, hoping to catch him, his invisible form.
Roll.
Dang it, it's a 2.
Miss.
Okay, I cast a Supreme Fireball of Destruction, level 25.
Oh, well, roll, but it's pretty much instantaneous. Yeah, you killed him.
Yes.
Damn it.
As my prize, I take your sister for my lady.
Ooh, do you hear those birds?
Oh, I do.
Oh my gosh, they're singing a song to us.
What song is it?
I call it the clock song. The lone cuckoo bird.
Bong.
Bong.
Bong. Bong. Bong. Bum 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 bum
Next up, Pat!
And that's our show. Thank you to We Know Each Other. Thanks to Dan and Ellen for stopping by. You can see We Know Each Other at Honey on the 21st of August. That's with the Monsters of Improv, hosted by Mike Dalaval. If you want more information about this or any other upcoming shows with Dan and Ellen, please go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/weknoweachotherimprov, all one word.
As always, please go check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PhilipSimondet, for my Minimum Fare web series, songs and things. Also, my new band has a couple of songs up there now, Misery Street. Also, I have a small part in Robert Elk's Fringe Festival show, Eggface. As of this recording, I'm not in every performance, and I don't yet know which ones, but if you go, I might be in that one.
Awesome. And I'm not doing anything coming up, but I will be shortly, so stay tuned. Check us out on iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, rate and review it. It helps us out a lot. Tune in next week when we'll be talking to a new guest. Who's that new guest going to be?
Who's that lady?
It's a surprise. But until then, as always, praise Jaibosh.